Welcome to PASIG Practice Pearls, where performing arts physical therapists share their expertise and discuss some of the unique needs of keeping artists healthy.
Hello and welcome. My name is Dr. Isabella Skangamore. I am a licensed physical therapist and orthopedic physical therapy resident. I will be hosting this episode of the PASIG podcast, and I will be joined by Dr. Patty Cavallari and Dr. Sarah Plummer-Holzman to discuss the clinical management and considerations for treating figure skaters. We will be focusing on the specific demands of the sport, evaluation considerations, interventions, and returning to the ice. I hope you all enjoy. Dr. Cavallari received her Bachelor of Science from the University of Wisconsin, Parkside, and her Doctor of Physical Therapy from Columbia University. She is a board-certified orthopedic clinical specialist and completed the Performing Arts Physical Therapy Fellowship at Harkness Center for Dance Injuries. She has a background in competition dance and is an instructor in full apparatus for classical Pilates. She has experience in treating people of all ages and has provided backstage physical therapy care for multiple Broadway shows. In addition to her clinical work, she is a teaching assistant for Doctor of Physical Therapy programs. Dr. Plummer-Holzman holds a BFA from the North Carolina School of the Arts, a doctorate in physical therapy from the University of Washington, and is a board-certified clinical orthopedic specialist. She has extensive training in functional manual therapy through the Institute of Physical Arts and is currently working towards certification. Previously, Dr. Plummer-Holzman danced professionally in New York City for 9 years, performing in both modern and contemporary ballet companies. She has studied with choreographer and anatomist Irene Dowd since 2000, assisting her for 5 years. Dr. Plummer-Holzman has been a dedicated practitioner and teacher in the Ashtanga yoga tradition for more than 25 years and has taught anatomy and kinesiology for yoga teachers since 2006. Hi, Sarah and Patty. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Isabella. Thank you for having us.
Hello. So you guys know we're going to be talking about figure skaters today, and you both have a wealth of knowledge to share, so I'm so happy to have both of you here. Let's jump right on in and tell me a little bit about what are the specific demands of figure skating.
Well, one of the hallmarks of figure skating is that skaters require a lot of speed, agility, strength, and power, as well as flexibility and control. And they are on a very slippery surface on ice, and they're required to do a lot of difficult jumps and turns. Mm-hmm. And doing these skills requires a lot of repetitive training with very long hours, which can all be very costly.
Yeah.
So Sarah definitely hit all the major points. But in addition to that, this is also a very unilateral sport that definitely trains to each skater's strengths. And I think sometimes kind of glosses over the weaknesses mm-hmm. and kind of just pretends they're not there because they do most of their jumps on one leg, and they just train that over and over again instead of balancing things out.
Yeah, very demanding sport. So with these high demands, high repetitions, what injuries or mechanisms or injuries are commonly seen with this population?
Well, there are several different types of disciplines in figure skating, so I think the mechanisms of injuries are kind of specific to the different disciplines. So there's singles, which have a lot of complicated jumps and turns. You have pairs, which where you have couples that are lifting, the man is usually lifting the woman above their head. They may be throwing their partner above their head while they're skating. There's also ice dance, which is more like ballroom dancing. Doing complicated footwork. So they're also doing partnering, maybe, but they don't do above the head throwing. Mm-hmm. And then there's synchronized dancers. You can have 8 to 20 skaters on the ice at once, traveling at a very high speeds or difficult footwork, requiring a lot of coordination and cohesiveness of the group. So each of those individual disciplines can present different injuries.
Wow. So yeah, the singles we tend to find more overuse injuries just from training the same thing over and over again. Whereas with the pairs and the synchronized settings or disciplines, we actually find a lot more acute injuries start to appear just because you have more people, so more unexpected things can happen on the ice, especially in synchronized skating. Mm-hmm. 20 people skating on the ice, doing complicated lifts and spins all at the same time. It can definitely be a recipe for things to quickly happen.
Wow, I wasn't aware of so many disciplines within figure skating. That's awesome. I can see now how all different mechanisms of injury can be really common.
And one other just commonality to all of those disciplines is that they're all wearing a boot. Mm-hmm. And boot can contribute to between 50 and 80% of the injuries. So if the skater has the right fitting boot, they can eliminate a lot of the problems that come about. And as Patty mentioned, a lot of those overuse mm-hmm. injuries that you see in the singles, a lot of those have to do with their training, but also with how their boot is fitting. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge consideration for skaters that most other sports and artists have to consider. Or don't have to consider.
Yeah, yeah. Beyond the boot, which is a huge element, what other top things should treating or evaluating clinicians be aware of when they're evaluating a figure skater?
You definitely want to know what leg they use to land when they're doing all their jumps. That is a huge thing. Most are going to be on their right side, but once in a while you will get a lefty. So I would definitely check in on that. And then I'd also ask about their training schedule. When they're at the younger competitive stage, they can be training 15 to 30 hours a week, and school is fit around mm-hmm. that. Whereas when they're more adult recreational, they may only be training 4 to 5 hours a week.
Wow. Wow. Very busy schedule. Is there any specific things that we should be making sure we look at when we have a figure skater come on in, beyond like laterality, footwear?
Well, we can look at some basic things that we would normally look at in mm-hmm. any physical therapy environment. Can they do some basic skills well? Where are their asymmetries? So from looking at a simple squat or a single leg squat, how, when they get on to, when they're on two legs, what is their ankle range of motion? What is their knee, their hip range of motion? When they get onto one leg, how does that change? Are they able to stabilize well? Do they lose their alignment once they get onto one leg? Mm-hmm. Those things can tell us a lot about how they might be landing from a jump or even taking off from a jump or to get into a jump.
Yeah. Great.
So looking at, you know, range of motion mm-hmm. as well as strength and skill with just some simple motions. And then, of course, we want to see something about or know something about through their subjective, about what they have to do, what are the things that they're having problems with specifically, mm-hmm. you know, within all of those disciplines, what are the specific issues that they're coming up with, and how does that relate to the body region that's injured?
Yeah, great. Great. And then once we gather this information, what have been some of your favorite or most successful interventions that you've used while you've been working with figure skaters?
Some of my favorites are kind of the classic performing arts ortho intervention. So working on squats, working on bridges, getting that good neutral control before adding in specific elements of choreography that they're working on for an upcoming competition, or if they're trying to increase how many rotations they can do, or if they want to do more jumping just in general, how to progressively load them. All those basic principles are really helpful with when I'm working with my figure skaters.
And also looking at like, how are they feeling when they're doing each of these things? As we start to do more complicated things, are they having pain. Mm-hmm. If we do a little bit more, does it increase or does it stay the same? Can we progress to another level without their symptoms starting to come back, mm-hmm. so that we can use that as a guide to how to progress them? Mm-hmm. And we can also look at their what they are doing to train off ice versus how their, you know, coaches are bringing them onto ice, mm-hmm. and help guide, again, in relation to their individual needs, like what level of competition they're at within the discipline that they're in, give a little bit of guidance to them and their coach in terms of what they should be doing, mm-hmm. in relation to their pain levels.
Mm-hmm. Great. That's really helpful. You know, knowing where to start when we have a figure skater coming in beyond, you know, the basic strengthening, range of motion training that we are also used to. Once we get more into that sport specific activity, what movements in figure skating can be generalized to other orthopedic groups?
Well, like Patty was talking about, so she was mentioning working on bridging, mm-hmm. working on squatting. Those are something that we work with any population. Yeah. I mean, from someone who's just, you know, in acute care with bed mobility, mm-hmm. we work on bridging and sit to stand. But those skills are invaluable even for the athletes. They need to be able to, again, do a simple squat, simple sit to stand with good alignment, with good trunk control.
Yeah.
And then be able to, like I said earlier, be able to take that onto one leg and mm-hmm. have good mechanics, good alignment, and good control once you take that into something that's happening faster. Mm-hmm. You know, taking that into like some kind of jump training, mm-hmm. Like we have something at Harkness that we work with that we starts from very simple jumps and works up to more complicated jumps. So you can take a figure skater through some kind of progression that gets them from very basic parallel on 2 feet to jumping from 2 feet to 1 foot and being able to land without that knee mm-hmm. crashing inward or their back arching, you know, whatever, again, recognizing that area of the body that's injured.
And after they mastered those basics, I find looking at their spinal extension control and flexibility is also super important. Mm-hmm. I find it actually be very similar to quite a few of my ballet dancers with in terms of how much they need and just how beautifully they can control it and need to express with that extension. If you think of like different layback spins mm-hmm. or camel, where it's essentially an arabesque, kind of in a planche position, but on ice and moving, you can do a lot of similar interventions with skaters that you would do with your ballet dancer.
Fantastic. It always surprises me when we put our athletes or higher level performers in simple positions like bridges or single leg squats, and they really, really struggle. So it's always a great refresher to bring us back and be like, even though these are high level athletes, you know, foundations are so important. So important. And once they master the foundations, they master that, you know, artistic extension. What are the key things to ensure a safe and productive return to sport for these figure skaters?
I think a lot of it goes back to training and how much they're doing and how quickly they add it back in. Because there's so much pressure just to be skating more and more and more to hone your craft, that making sure they're doing it in a safe manner is really helpful. And so giving strict instructions of this many jumps of this type is all you're allowed to do in practice today. Mm-hmm. And then next week you can add a second one or a third one. Mm-hmm. Can be really helpful and empowering and help getting buy-in so they know, okay, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing, but there is light going forward. I will be able to do more.
Yeah, and maybe also making sure that they have a really individualized warm-up mm-hmm. and cool-down that may have been something that was missing in their previous, you know, before they came in to see us. Mm-hmm. Make sure that the people around them, their coaches, if it's an adolescent, their parents, other people are aware of what they can do to help support them. I mean, even from making sure they're getting enough sleep, mm-hmm. making sure they're getting enough rest. That's always a huge thing that I think a lot of athletes don't think about how important that is for recovery. and nutrition, mm-hmm. everything that's going to support their success to performance, making sure that all those other pieces are in place as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. And in your experiences, have the coaches and the family members been supportive with your recommendations?
Yeah, for the most part, very, very appreciative mm-hmm. to have some extra help with what's going on.
Fantastic.
Definitely. And they also love to know, like, why as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Making sure, you know, we hone in on that why, both for the patient and for coaches, family members, caregivers, is so important to reflect on that and really make sure they truly understand why they're doing things. It really gives them great autonomy in their care. And then we don't have ice rinks in clinic. Is there any special considerations we should have, you know, with that transition from stable surfaces onto ice?
Well, there are some progressions that are recommended for going from their off-ice training to on-ice training, sort of practical recommendations from being able to do your simple movements, you know, off the ice, and then simple footwork on the ice, being able to do a jump, you know, off of 2 feet off the ice, and then being able to do that on the ice. Mm-hmm. So you're doing a gradual progression from what you can do off ice really well, mm-hmm. and then bringing that onto the ice. And then, of course, that's where the coach is so important, because they're the ones that have access to other tools mm-hmm. when they're on the ice. That's what they're, you know, they're really for, is to help them do these things safely.
Yeah.
But if they're not doing something correctly off ice, it's not going to happen on the ice. So I think that's a huge yeah. element that's done in a stepwise fashion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely rely on that relationship and communication between myself, my patient, and their coach, whether that's through the patient or directly with the coach, yeah. of like, okay, I'm seeing this in the clinic, can you work on this on the ice now? Mm-hmm. And having that back and forth can be one way to help bridge that gap if you don't have the option of going and seeing them on the ice or FaceTiming mm-hmm. with them or whatnot.
And often I know the coaches have come back to us and said, can we start working on this?
Yeah.
We'll say, how about you can do it once?
Yeah.
You know, once. Because that's another element that Patty was mentioning before. There's a tremendous amount of repetition in their training yeah. to begin with. Mm-hmm. But they, you know, you have to consider, is this skater ready for a lot of repetition of landing on one leg? Mm-hmm. Again, considering the injury that they have. Can they do it over and over again off ice?
Yeah.
Then they might be ready to do it with repetition on the ice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. Continuing with those concepts of progressive loading that we always are so focused on in our profession. And then
that's right.
My final question for you guys is there any other advice you'd want to give to a you know, a coworker, fellow clinician in regards to treating this specific patient population of figure skaters? Any final words of wisdom?
Maybe get a really good subjective, just like you would with any patient. You want to yeah. really understand what's going on, what they perceive as going on. Sometimes what they think is going on isn't what's going on. But, you know, you want to have a really clear picture what their level of competition is, mm-hmm. what their schedule is. Again, Patty was mentioning earlier, you have a lot of kids, young kids
yeah.
that are training for 15 to 30 hours a
wow.
week.
That's
from
a
the
lot.
Age of 8. It's crazy. But they're doing it, and they are also balancing that with their schoolwork mm-hmm. around that. And that's their only social
yeah.
group, you know. So just kind of seeing the big picture of their lifestyle mm-hmm. along with the injury, because especially with the overuse injuries, that's a lot of what it's about, is their training load.
Yeah.
And then, of course, getting your usual really good physical therapy objective measures.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah, Sarah's advice is so great, and I would definitely echo that. My only other advice would be is if you're not familiar with movements of figure skating, watch a lot of videos. Yeah. There's a ton out there on YouTube, and it's helpful to just see how they're moving, how they're connecting things, even just like what positions they're in. Like, are they upright? Are they in extreme spinal extension? Mm-hmm. Are they flexing forward? Just getting used to looking at that will make it much easier to see where things aren't quite working out well when you have that skater in front of you in the clinic. Yeah.
That's fantastic. You know, YouTube is such a wealth of knowledge. It's such a great resource to have. Both of you, that's wonderful advice. And thank you, Sarah and Patty, for joining me this evening. It has been a true pleasure to have you on the PawSig podcast. I've really learned so much about managing the figure skater, and I'm really excited to go back to the clinic and see what I can apply. And I hope our audience has too. So thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Isabella.
Thank you.
We have gone over a lot of information on today's episode of the PawSig Practice Pearls. So to recap, mechanism of injury can depend on forces based on the discipline our figure skater is training in. Specifically, singles are more prone to chronic repetition injuries since they train the same side and the same skills repeatedly over and over again. While couples, ice dance, and synchronized skaters are more dependent on the inner coordination between pairs and groups, which makes them more prone towards an acute injury with the larger lifts, the faster footwork, and the skills of synchronization working within other people's limits of stability, we see a lot more traumatic and acute injuries with all those external variables. And also considering the boot, it contributes up to 50 to 80% of the injuries. So this large percentage of injury risk is extrinsic and based solely on the fit of the boot. So that's something we must consider when evaluating these patients. What we should get from the history, different beyond the scope of our typical intake, is laterality. We have to figure out what side does the skater consider their dominant side, because figure skating training focuses on strengths and not weaknesses, not training out those weaknesses, not trying to find balance, but focusing on the strengths and using that same side repeatedly. So whatever side is their dominant side can really give us some insight into some asymmetries we might see when we get towards our interventions. We also want to know the training schedule and how it relates biopsychosocially, and as well as a school schedule if we're seeing an adolescent. And then we want to make sure we really understand the aggravating factors. We can use videos. The PawSig website has definitions and videos of ice skating skills to help supplement and improve communication with this conversation. And we can also use these videos to have an idea of the patient's goals or to compare a self-video to that ideal technique we're looking for. With interventions, as always, you want to ensure self-efficacy, confidence, and low pain levels in basic skills prior to progressing. Movements in ice skating can be generalized to other settings of physical therapy, even from things that we would do in acute care, but then making them more challenging for these athletes by adding more difficult forces, such as impact forces or angular forces. But as we do make these more challenging, we want to make sure throughout the mechanics are controlled, moving from the basics to these sport-specific activities. Squats, bridges, and the neutral pelvis are bread and butter foundational exercises need to be mastered before adding in specifics of choreography or that progressively loading these patients before we return them to the ice. Diving in a little deeper to that single leg squat exercise, we want to make sure that they master this skill with changes in environmental variables, such as a more dynamic single leg squat, as seen with the star balance, on a narrow medial lateral base of support, mimicking that blade, and then potentially even adding some momentum, further mimicking the variables and constructs of the ice. We've got the lack of friction, you've got the hardness, you've got the blade on the boot. So get creative in your interventions, especially as you're progressing towards that return to sport. And then An additional thing to consider is looking at spinal extension. We see this in many types of figure skating spins. So something that may be more specific to ice skating performing arts is looking at the excursion as well as the control. Just because they have a lot of range of motion, can they control it well? Finally, that moment all our figure skaters are waiting for is that return to ice. This may require altering the training schedule, and we need to be in clear communication with coaches, patients, and parents if it's an adolescent, in instructions for load progression for a controlled return to the ice without recurrence of injury. We want to make sure these patients have individualized warm-ups and cool-downs, in addition to the education that we are consistently providing about sleep and nutrition for recovery. These pieces may never have been there for these patients before, and a silver lining to injury is that this is a great opportunity to make sleep and nutrition habits to help support these athletes. Again, continually educating coaches and skaters on why these extra pieces are so important, because then they're more likely to adhere to our recommendations, you know, when this injury is a distant memory. And finally, that communication with the coach to bridge the gap, since most physical therapists cannot be there for that transition to on-ice training. So really educating the coach to bridge that gap and return to ice with performance and competition to the fullest ability of our patient. Thank you so much, and it has been a pleasure, and I hope you all feel that you have learned something from this podcast.
Thank you for listening to PASIG Practice Pearls, created by the Performing Arts Special Interest Group of the APTA Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy.